Hello and welcome to Motorsport 360, your look around the world of racing. I'm Naveen Razik, alongside me as always, it's Joshua Carroll-Walden. We have plenty to get through this show. We've got Formula One, Supercars and IndyCar back in action over the weekend, but we are going to start first off with Formula E. Now, the season decider kicks off this weekend, the doubleheader in Montreal. Well, we're going to talk about what has been the news story of the week and arguably one of the big stories of the year. Now, Mercedes is going to join Formula E for the 2018-19 season and at the same time leave DTM completely, the Touring Car Series, which they've had an affinity for the last 30 years. This is extraordinary news. We'll start with the Formula E end. This is everything that the series would have wanted and more, Josh. I mean, it's extraordinary. They now have all three of the big German manufacturers involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, on Formula E's end, this is fantastic to have the big three German car manufacturers who, like, let's not forget, you know, for a long time they've been, you know, basically globally recognized as producing large engine four-door sedans, you know, the big cars with all the, you know, little bits on top. Now, for Formula E to come along, to have a few seasons, and then for all three of them to get in is, it's fantastic for them and really does speak volume about where the future is going, as well as also having Renault and a little bit of Richard Branson involvement in there as well. So it's fantastic for Formula E, and, you know, it's just everything they've want. You know, they've got five real car manufacturers now, you know, Jaguar, Audi, BMW, Mercedes, and of course Renault. So that's five out of what's probably going to be like 10, 12, like, we don't know. But yeah, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. The 2018 season is still a long, long way away. Like, it's still, you know, about 14 months, and, you know, in the motor racing world, 14 months is an eternity. So, five manufacturers already. Could we see a sixth? Who knows? It's a real good possibility. Like, we haven't actually seen, you know, a Japanese manufacturer yet. That's, you know, definitely surprising. We haven't seen, you know, the likes of, you know, General Motors, you know, having a dip in, which is, you know, again, a little bit surprising, or Honda. So there are a lot more manufacturers that have the ability to go into Formula E, and, you know, General Motors, as an example, and Toyota, you know, they've been producing electric cars for a while. So it's five manufacturers right now for 2018, 2019. Probably wouldn't be surprised if there was a sixth.
It certainly seems that way because of the way the motor industry is going. And the thing I like about this is the people who don't really understand the logic. They've all come out of the woodwork and said Formula E is a rubbish product. You can't hear the engines. Why they're all going in? It's just simple business, which is why they're going in. They're all going in because they know that it's going to be the way of the future. Like it or not, you're going to be driving an electric car or a hybrid car in the future. I mean, there's plenty of more manufacturers who will be lining up. Volvo is a really obvious one. It's the only series that really meets their specifications for what they want their cars in the future to be, which is 100% electric or 100% hybrid, no petrol-only cars involved. We have no idea what's happening in Asia. We've still got Japanese manufacturers. Toyota, Honda could be a possibility, particularly considering that there's a couple of those guys who have some interesting situations in other sports, like, of course, Formula One and the World Endurance Championship. Korea is a big untapped market. We have no idea what Hyundai or Kia could come up with as well. There's certainly plenty of opportunity in Formula E. So, yeah, it's great news for the series. What is probably most surprising, though, is the decision that Mercedes have taken at the same time to leave DTM, which is, of course, for many European touring car fans, and for many touring car fans around the world, the premier class. I mean, whilst I personally don't think it holds a candle to supercars in terms of entertainment and that sort of thing, it's clearly one of the best touring car championships in the world. It's produced a whole host of great drivers, and Mercedes have certainly been part of that. So for them to walk away from this for Formula E, and, like, at the same time, there was no other real impetus for this. It's not like what happened with Audi and Le Mans, where and diesel gates and all of that was just, it was just a convenient. Mercedes have made a choice to get out of it now, and it really, I have real doubts over DTM's future now, because there's only going to be 12 cars on the grid in a couple of years' time.
Yeah, it's really not looking, you know, that fantastic for DTM right now. And you know, like I was always fond of DTM. Like, you know, I was introduced to them, you know, when I was quite young in the Tokyo race car games, and you know, I basically saw them as, you know, the German cousin for what was then known at the time as V8 Supercars Australia. So it's a real shame. And you know, I think, you know, what it really comes down to is just their philosophy just doesn't work, you know, because there's no actual private teams in DTM. They are all manufactured cars, and technically speaking, you know, I'm not 100% clear on what the current regulations are in terms of manufacturing a team, but
it's interesting, but with the current regulations, because there's been a lot of talk about this, is that this was meant to be the year that their Class 1 regulations with Super GT came in, and they were going to move from the normally aspirated V8s to the twin-turbo V4s, which I think are running Super GT, but it didn't happen in the end, and they're still trying to nut out the details of that. So it was an interesting change. This was pretty much their Gen 2 moment, to use V8 supercars as an analog here, because, and in the end, I think they botched it because they lost Mercedes.
Yeah. Like it hasn't gone well, as currently the current situation is that 2019 will see the introduction of the twin turbo 4-cylinder engines into DTM in 2019, and that's 12 months that's, you know, the season after Mercedes will leave. So yeah, and you know, I'm not exactly sure. You know, just going on from what I was saying, I'm pretty sure that, you know, it's all, you know, funded, you know, through the actual manufacturers themselves. Like there's no like, you know, how in supercars, how, you know, it's just the teams and then bodywork on top. You know, the cars, you know, they're not traditional cars you drive on the road, but what it is basically is, you know, the manufacturers, you know, basically in a word, it's not leasing, but it's basically the same thing. They lease the cars to, you know, pit crews, and then they take it back again at the end of the race weekend. And also DTM have, you know, been very open, and I'd say almost encouraging with their weird aerodynamics advantages, which is, you know, what has led them to have to introduce DRS to make sure that there's actually still some overtaking. So yeah, it's just got to be honest, DTM, you know, has basically gotten itself into a big hole that I don't think it can unfortunately come out of now, as, you know, they've basically got the worst of both worlds when it comes to, you know, they've got the worst products of, you know, F1, you know, the dirty air, the DRS, the huge expenses, and then they've got the worst of the touring car pedigree, which is, you know, low to no market relevance, and you know, at the same time, the fans just aren't that interested either, which has made, you know, German motorsport as a whole, and I know that me and Naveen have talked, you know, basically at length about this over the past 16 months, it's really, you know, it's really hurt German motorsports. So yeah, it's a real shame, and you know, there should be panic bells going off at DTM right now. Like there should be some alarm bells going off, as you know, they've only got Audi and BMW, and you know, even then, you know, BMW right now, they're focusing on their M6 GTE car, which has been popping up on YouTube videos and on motorsport forums over the past couple of weeks, and then Audi, you know, they're just, you know, there's a little bit of F1 rumors and DTM and just recovering from Dieselgate. So it's really not in a good spot right now, and also as well, you know, it really has lost all its appeal to any driver that, you know, wants that would be wanting to go into them, as you know, you would see most of these guys, because right now, I'll just run through the Mercedes drivers, that they've got right now, the Mercedes test driver Gary Paffet, he's currently with Mercedes-Benz. He's probably going to retire. Paul de Resta, probably going to retire. Ex F1 driver Mara Engel, he's probably just going to stick with GT cars. And then the other three drivers, they're basically just going to have to find lower category GT drives. So, and then there's just the case of what is everyone else going to do? Is it best to leave before the ship possibly sinks? So it really, on the whole, it's just bad news for the whole GTM paddock, and it's certainly not what they want. Because they were sort of riding on a hope, basically, of the rookie Rene Rast possibly taking the championship from Mattias Ekström with four events to go. It's just this has basically put a massive torpedo into that possible good news story. It's just very dire times in DTM right now.
And it makes me really think that supercars a couple of years ago really missed a bullet here, because this could have gone that way had they not opened up
That
the
they were offered this product. That they were offered. They were offered by DTM the actual identical DNA, basically making. They were offered to become DTM Australia, and oh my God, I'm so thankful that they said no.
It's
Just
they really dodged it, because first off, again, not going for the IP, but also making sure that you've got cars which not only are easy to overtake, pretty much, supercars, there's a little bit of debate about that a little bit nowadays, but they're still very good, very easy to make a pass through, and you produce great racing, but also that they opened up the series at just about the right time. I mean, had they waited a couple of years after, had Ford gone and there'd be nobody else but Holden, the series could have fallen in on itself, because nobody wants to watch Super Commodores. They want a bit of rivalry and things like that. The decision, I guess, in 2013 to open it up to Nissan and Mercedes and then later to Volvo really seems to have helped them dodge a bullet and just about keep the series going. They also handed a stroke of luck with Roger Penske deciding to get involved, and he's pretty much been the driving force behind Ford these days. But yeah, you have to say, supercars, they'll be breathing a sigh of relief at the moment that things did not go as bad as they did.
Yeah, well, they're certainly not out of the woods yet. I still think, because I actually said this on Twitter, this morning when I woke up, when I heard the news, that they really should be starting to press ahead with Gen 3, because right now you'd have to say, I know this is skipping ahead in the notes, but Gen 2 right now seems to be, on a solid fan excuse me, on a solid foundation. And right now, the world motorsport, is changing, faster and faster. So I think for Gen 3, opening up to different body shapes, coupes and, possibly hatchbacks, if they can work some magic and get Ludo on board to make sure it's an ex a success. I think, that should be, in order just to make it, survive. Because as much as this debate about four-cylinder engines and hybrid engines and electric engines and electric power units and the possibility of hybrids and biofuels, like, I can, probably, state that no motorsport fan would want, no racing at all compared to racing, compared to electric car racing. I can state with the fact that electric racing is so much better than no racing. So, yeah, I really hope they put, really put the foot put their foot on the gas in terms of getting Gen 3 out the door, just to keep the manufacturers interested, because it's been highlighted so many times, basically this year, about how all motorsport categories around the world, basically, need to change and get with the times, as well as keeping their own DNA and making sure that the fans are at least content. So,
It's been an extraordinary sort of era of transition we're living in at the moment, I guess, with first of all, with the move from petrol to electric, which is inevitable no matter how you cut it, but also the amount of series where this is coming up as an issue. Formula One, obviously, I went through with it this year. IndyCar's going to go through it next year, and we'll talk about that a bit later, because they've unveiled the look of their chassis for next year. WEC are at a crossroads with LMP1. We're not quite sure what's going on there. Supercars have tried to get things going, but they've stalled a little bit. It's plateaued, I guess, in terms of the momentum and things like that. The only series, I guess, that's sort of escaping is NASCAR, but I guess even they've had their problems with formats and things
this
year.
I think with NASCAR, you know, it's a whole nother kettle of fish, really, as, you know, it's stock car. Like, you can't really, can, you know, make it look different, but at the end of the day, it's still a stock car, so it mostly will come down to the actual engine itself, and, you know, people talk about how big, you know, the V8 is for supercars. You know, the V8 in NASCAR is so, so much bigger.
Because they do not care at all. That's the point.
Yeah. And, you know, just the legendary roar. Like, you know, you take a NASCAR to anywhere in the world and you let that engine rip, everyone in that vicinity that would hear it would know that that is a NASCAR. So, yeah, it's inevitable, but, you know, NASCAR is just a whole different kettle of fish, because, you know, you have to come up with basically a successor to a very successful engine that works at, you know, restricted plate races such as Talladega and Daytona, where for a long period of time, a lot of the race, you are, you know, basically getting extremely hot exhaust air and you know, just hot air in general from the car that's 2 millimeters ahead of you, and also being able to work perfectly well at Sonoma and Watkins Glen. So, yeah, it's that the successor engine to that will have to be very, very reliable, because you can't have engines continuously blowing up in NASCAR, because that would just make it it would just make it look like an absolute clown show, basically, you know, with engines blown up left, right, front, and center. And it's a huge safety risk as well, you know, just with how many cars there are, how close they are, and, you know, just how much of the track they use. Because on oval circuits, they use the whole track for the whole race. Like, they use high line, they use bottom line. So if there's a smidge of oil anywhere, there's going to be chaos. So, yeah, on the whole, this is just the era of transition, and, you know, in 10 years' time, we will look back at this, and, you know, we will realize that we really were in a massive storm of change, and there's nothing to stop the change, and if you go against it, then your category is going to die, and, you know, that's just something, you know, that, you know, I think most motorsport fans, I think about 90% of motorsport fans know that, but, you know, the actual acceptance of that, you know, is certainly difficult for some, and you know people will see on social media that people are struggling with that acceptance, and it's just the way that, you know, it's going to go, and, you know, there's no real alternative.
Yeah, and I guess that puts everybody on notice as well about getting with the times. Anyway, we've had a little bit of a wander here. Let's move back to Formula E. This weekend, the Montreal E-Prix doubleheader. The first race we've had in Montreal, not at the circuit Gilles Villeneuve, where they host Formula One, but on a new circuit, very tight, according to some of the early looks I've seen. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. Of course, we had a tight circuit last year for Decider as well at the UK. I mean, we've had three very close deciders in the past. Sorry, two very close deciders in the past, both at Battersea Park. The first one, of course, Nelson Piquet Jr. just winning after Sebastian Buemi struggled to pass a car in the final few laps. The second one, of course, with this bizarre start to the race, and it was decided on the fastest lap after the two title contenders crashed out, being Buemi and Degrassi. At the moment, Buemi has a 10-point lead over Degrassi. But anything can happen, and it almost certainly will. The feud between these two has been going off over the past few days. They've both been throwing words at each other, and also the fact that we've had a couple of different winners in the past few rounds, such as Felix Rosenquist and Sam Birdwell could also come in and spoil the party. It's certainly set to be another exciting round. Still incredibly difficult to pick, but simply on past form, it's going to be very difficult to put Sebastian Buemi away again. I think Lucas Degrassi is going to have to pull off something exceptional, or Sebastian Buemi is going to have some terrible luck for him not to finish the year out in front.
Absolutely. And, you know, Lucas Degrassi, you know, you could basically say after the Berlin E-Prix, you know, it was his championship to lose, and he bottled it massively at the New York E-Prix, finishing fourth and fifth. Just, you know, he just, you know, had, you know, what was the worst weekend, with the possible exception of Marrakesh, where he finished fifth. It was the worst weekend that he's had all season, so... Yeah, it was terrible for him. And, you know, Buemi, you know, he went away, did the 6 hours in the Nürburgring, and now he's back in North America. And, he's just in the prime position, a 10-point lead, so a comfortable margin. But, you know, if you slip up in one race, then you'll find that Degrassi may well have a solid lead heading into the final one on the Sunday. So... Yeah, on the whole, you know, it's pretty close. Like as you said to me, Buemi is easily in the box seat, and I just have to give a shout out to Sam Bird, who took out the New York E-Prix clean sweep from nowhere. Like, he only finished on second and third at Marrakesh and at Mexico City, respectively, and you know, the best result outside that was seventh in Berlin, and for him to just, you know, waltz into New York and take both race wins is pretty surprising. And, you know, and also as well, you know, Pierre Gasly came in and beat Degrassi on the Sunday race in his second race in Formula E. So yeah, just on the whole, you know, it was a very, you know, mixed and unpredictable weekend. You know, Stefan Sarrazin, you know, he's been nowhere all season. A best result, 10th, got a podium in race one. So it's, you know, I think it's insanely unpredictable. And, you know, that's fantastic, you know, as there would be fans, you know, going to New York that probably would have, you know, going to the New York E-Prix, that probably would have thought that's basically going to be the Lucas Degrassi show. And that they couldn't have been more wrong. So, yeah, on the whole, you know, it was... fantastic for Formula E, you know, just to have, you know, a really unpredictable weekend, and I think it really, you know, will set in stone the future of the New York E-Prix on the calendar. And apart from that, you know, there's just Montreal to go, and qualifying will be pretty crucial. And it's Buemi's to lose.
Yeah, it certainly will be. It's going to be another exciting weekend that kicks off Saturday and Sunday, or Sunday and Monday early morning for us Australians. Let's move now to Formula One. Plenty to get through now. We've talked at length on the podcast before about the Halo, the Aero Shield, the screen. Basically, all three have been tested. The Halo, I think, works on a practical level, but not an aesthetic one. The Aero screen is sort of in the middle, but there were concerns about people getting out of it and stuff. And the Shield was tried at Silverstone, but they said that... But Sebastian Vettel thought the reflections were getting in the way and was feeling dizzy, so that's effectively been scrapped. We now know that the FIA are going to introduce the Halo next year, and that's going ahead. Let's face it, we've talked more than enough about this, because I don't think we need to voice our opinions that both of us aren't really fans of it, but I guess if you want to do head protection, it's certainly one option, and I guess it's probably the simplest option to implement in terms of design and things like that, Josh. So, yeah, it's going ahead. We can't really do anything about it, and we've probably talked at length about our opinions on the other stuff, so... Yeah, not really much to say other than that. It'll be interesting to see how they do it next year and whether it follows suit in other categories.
I will add, you know, one thing. Who would have thought that Formula One and the FIA would pick the simplest solution for Formula One? That's unheard of. Like, it's always been the most complex, and then for them to go around and go, oh, yeah, we'll go for the most simplest solution. It's basically, It's basically like the fittest man in the world, basically turn around and saying, "Oh yeah, I'll just go and have Netflix and Macca's marathon this weekend, watch all of Game of
They did,
Thrones." You
to be
know,
honest,
it's
they
a
did
complete
take
skin turn.
1.5 years to decide to use the concept they tested the first, but hey, at least there's a bit of testing there, and they've taken the simple solution.
Yeah, absolutely, and yeah, that. I don't really want to talk about it anymore. Like I've talked, we've talked too much about it. It's just, it really should have just been, test them all in private, and then, when you make your decision, release the video of the one that you've picked, that's aesthetically pleasing, and prove that, it can, deflect a tire, and then a driver can get out, and then just go racing. Like, it's really, taking all the momentum, all the breath away from, what is going to be a fantastic end to this year's championship fight between Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, it certainly spoiled the party in that sense, and I don't think maybe we need to put a moratorium on halos on this show until next year when they actually get introduced. I think that's when we'll next bring them up. Let's talk about something more interesting and more exciting, though. The Robert Kubica hype train, which is slowly gathering momentum. Of course, Kubica tested for Renault privately a little earlier, a little later last month, I believe, and rumors of a return to him to Renault have gave the momentum, especially because it looks like there might be a seat or so available. Still have no idea what's going on in terms of the silly season, which we will talk about next week once we're in the mid-season break. I think that'll be the best time to lay all of that out. But certainly, the Robert Kubica hype is certainly gaining momentum. He's now got a test after Hungary, pretty much straight into the first mid-season break. He'll also be testing with Nicholas Latifi. I think amongst the other test drivers, he's got named Nobuharu Matsushita will get his test with Sauber, which of course is quite interesting, particularly when you consider the Honda connections in there as well. But other than that, surely the big news is Kubica is going to be back. He's going to be driving an F1 car in an official F1 test, and the momentum is building. I still think it's long odds for him to be back in a car next year, but it would certainly be a story if he was, Josh.
Well, I will say this. If he does come back, it would be a massive shame for him to be uncompetitive either in an uncompetitive Renault or he's just not up to scratch. Like, if he is to come back, I want him to basically be, on the competitive, right up there, fighting Hülkenberg and, almost showing it up, almost showing him up, week in, week out. And if he's not gonna be, as good as Hülkenberg, and he's gonna be a bit of a disappointment, then I think it would just be best for everyone if, if he just, calls it quits, right here, right now, as, like, it, even though, it's disappointing, and, we always wonder what might have been had he not had that horrific crash, rally car crash. It's certainly a better way, to basically sum up his career rather than he comes back to F1 after his crash. There's all this hype and it leads to nothing and it just falls apart like a absolute, like just an absolute cake
Yeah,
just
we don't
melting
want it to
away.
be
Like,
another Nigel Mansell 1995. That's what we're saying, where he comes back from IndyCar, he's conquered America, and he comes back and he can't fit in his car. And he only does two races and has never races drives for McLaren again. Or like Jenson Button's come back at Monaco, where he ended up stuck with a couple of penalty points in perpetuity on his license because of some really scrappy driving. So yeah, if he needs to do it, he needs to do it right. And I guess maybe the best option is we let sometime later in the year he has one race and we see how he goes. And it's not made up to be a big deal. It certainly has been at the moment, but maybe I think we need to calm down a bit.
yes, he is testing for Renault this weekend, but so is Nicholas Latifi, and he is actually the other Canadian in the F1 paddock at the moment. He's doing pretty all right in Formula 2. He hasn't particularly been earmarked. He hasn't even been mentioned in the silly season talk. He's currently in fourth place. So, if the opportunity were to arose, I'm pretty sure he'd have enough points on his super license. So, yeah, and then we can't forget the French connection, basically, of Pierre Gasly and what happens at Toro Rosso. So, his Kubica's name is one of the names in what's a very juicy list for list of options for Renault, as they are actually pretty spoilt for choice, especially if Gasly does get basically, oh yeah, one more year, Gasly. That'd be a very juicy option for Renault to basically buy out his contract and get him in, or even better, get Carlos Sainz in. Get Carlos Sainz in. That's another name that's another combination pairing, I should say, that's been talked about quite a bit actually in the past month. So Renault have got quite a few options to replace Jolyon Palmer. Like, to be honest, I have like it would take a miracle for Jolyon Palmer to be on the grid in Melbourne for the start of the 2018 season. He needs a miracle to be on the grid, as he's basically doing everything right to make sure his F1 career ends as soon as possible. So, yeah, there's going to be a new face alongside Hülkenberg next year. Like, I think everyone just knows that. But the big question is who? Also as well, Sergei Sorokin, he hasn't been mentioned again. And he's very reliable, and he's done, this is 2 years in a row that he's done test days for the team. So yeah, you've just got to wonder, whether or not Sorokin just slides on in there, out of the blue. So
It's
we'll
still an
just have to wait
option.
and see.
Also, what happens with Esteban Ocon? I'm not sure if he's still got ties with Renault, but he was the test driver at one point.
From what I'm seeing, he's signed on at Force India next year, and from everything I've seen, there is no good reason for him to leave Force
Yeah,
India
I
at the
doubt
end of this
there'll
year.
be
Like,
any big movers there. Also, a quick wrap up of silly other season. Other silly season news before we do our proper look in during the mid-season break. Roman Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen both confirmed at Haas for next year. That's a pretty common sense pairing. They're both pretty solid drivers. I see why Haas are just going to stick with some reliability see, and I guess some familiarity for next year. I don't think that's a big deal at all. So with that, we head off to Hungary. An interesting track. It's produced some great races and some terrible ones. I mean, this used to be the race every year that Martin Brundle will have off because he couldn't be bothered showing up because it was just incredibly dull. But in the past few years, they've been somewhat interesting. Last year, not too much. 2014 was quite good. 2006, when Jenson Button won, was quite good. You never know what you're going to get. In terms of this year, it's very interesting because of how close Ferrari and Mercedes have been. Could this be the first real track where we see Ferrari have a proper edge over them because of the way it is, the way that it's very short, very high on downforce, and Ferrari have a slightly better aero set up this year than they were last year, and possibly a slightly better aero set up than Mercedes in general. How will this factor in? How will Red Bull, who've been incredibly strong over the past few races, particularly when we thought that they wouldn't be, they've been pretty strong on the blocks, and Daniel Ricciardo has been consistently performing for them as well. Max Verstappen as well. I mean, Verstappen is probably the one who's had the worst run of luck, but it'll be nice to see him up there on the podium as well. You never know what could happen. I think it could be one of the closest races in terms of performance we get all year.
Yeah, absolutely, and I do just feel that Ferrari do have the edge over Mercedes at Hungary. Like I've been, I've basically circled this race for Ferrari for like 2 months now. As this is the race where they can get a 1-2 with Vettel and Raikkonen, and really put pressure on Mercedes heading into the summer break. Like honestly, I don't have high hopes for Hungary this weekend. I think, just with all the dirty air, I think, and with the extreme density of the corners and the lack of straights, I think, all the overtaking opportunities are going to be turn one, turn one, and turn one. As it just doesn't look promising on paper. But then again, anything can happen at Hungary. Like if there's rain, like there could be a surprise rainfall, or whatever. Like you just don't know because it's just Hungaroring is just in one of those weird climate places that four seasons can basically happen in one day. So yeah, it's certainly going to be very close to the top. Red Bull, yeah, I just think I think everyone is slowly coming to the sudden realization that the RB13 is built for straight line speed to compensate the Renault engine, which is basically the complete flip of the cars that they've had in previous years. Focusing on great mechanical grip and great chassis grip. So I just I think they'll be de I think they'll be there. Like they'll be well ahead of the midfield pack and all the Force Indias and Williams. But I just think they're going to be in a bit of no man's land. I think they need a bit of a wet qualifying or intermediate qualifying session for Ricciardo and Verstappen to actually have a chance at Hungary this weekend. But apart from that, we just don't know. And also as well, isn't there a team or a manufacturer bringing in an engine upgrade this weekend? I think it might be Renault F1, but Renault F1 only. And I think there might also be a slight upgrade to the Red Bull as well, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah, I'm not too sure on the specifics of that, but that might be happening. This it sort of be an odd time. You'd think they would wait until after the mid-season break to get things sorted out, but you never know. That could be what happened. I think Sauber have got some significant aero upgrades coming. Whether that will help will be debatable. With that as well, the championship of course closed up massively after the last race. It's now only a single point between for Vettel and Hamilton. Hamilton technically has been the quicker car over one lap so far this year. I mean, Sebastian Vettel's only had the one pole position. Lewis Hamilton has had six, but still, you don't know how close it can be. And I guess it'll come down to setup on the day, you'd have to say. So yeah, I'm not really going to make any predictions, but it's certainly going to be Vettel Hamilton, and whoever wins will certainly take control of the championship and a lot of the momentum heading into that mid-season break.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's going to be very fast paced. When we get back, Belgium and Italy, and then the Asian leg of the season, and then the Americas, and then we're at Abu Dhabi. So, there are not a lot of opportunities left to really capitalize on the other's mistake. Yeah, it's really you just get the feeling that this won't be decided before Mexico or at Mexico. Like this is going to go to Brazil and Abu Dhabi, which is fantastic. So yeah, right now I'd have to say Vettel will take the win at Hungary because he hasn't actually won a race since May at the Monaco Grand Prix when he broke Ferrari's drought, and then he's only had two race wins before that, and a lot of podiums. So I'd have to say that this is the race where Vettel, really, gets the scruff of the neck, really takes it by the scruff of the neck and comes away with the victory. And I think this could, in terms of Raikkonen and what he's going to do, like I just don't know with Raikkonen right now. Like, he could turn up and be amazing, or he could turn up and be just there in the top five. So you just never know with Raikkonen at the moment, and it's pretty frustrating as a Raikkonen fan to just go, when Ferrari's got a good car, to basically just go and say, yeah, Raikkonen doesn't really have a chance this weekend because if it's a Ferrari, it's going to be Vettel. So yeah, no idea what Raikkonen's going to do. Hamilton, Bottas are going to be strong. Like Hamilton's still riding on that high. After the British Grand Prix, and he's got a very interesting haircut. And Bottas, seems to be, basically, really, he seems to be taking off after Ricciardo in terms of, being exceptionally good at making the most of the situation that's in front of him. So if there's a chaotic race, wouldn't be surprised if Bottas wins again, as, that's just something that Bottas likes doing. So yeah, on the whole, it's going to be a pretty, it's a crucial race for sure because it's pretty much tied, and we're heading into summer break where basically, It's going to be decided in the garages in the summer break, who comes out on top at the end of the season for both the drivers and constructors' stand-ins. And Hungary's basically the old race out, really, in terms of, just the general flow of this championship. So this could very well be the race that, really decides who's really going to be behind the eight ball for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's certainly set to be another interesting one that kicks off, of course, on Friday night, and will finish off on Sunday night. Moving to Australia and to the Virgin Australia Supercars Championship, plenty to discuss in the world of supercars. We've had plenty of news, including the unveiling of the sound of the newest engine to join the category, the new Turbo V6, which was put inside a Holden Sandman car driven by Jamie Whincup, Craig Lowndes, and the like. They've been racing around at the nearby Holden Testing Centre as well as at Queensland Raceway. The sound is interesting. I would say, if anything, it's a little wheezy compared to the current generation V8 in terms of its soundscape. It's not terrible. It's not the V6 sort of dry and sort of textureless as such, but it's not exactly the full thing, but I do think it will be interesting to see if fans actually pick out the difference next year when it runs in tandem with the soft launch with a couple of wildcard entries next year. I think that's when I think we'll really hear the difference.
It's a real, interesting, development basically of how, it's all come to be, firstly with, the Wheels, Wheels magazine leak. I think it was towards the beginning of the month or middle of the month, and then, progressively, there was, Triple Eight on their YouTube page, on their YouTube channel, sorry, and the Facebook as well, releasing the full HD version, of what was basically going on at Morgan Park, and then there was the I think low quality, like not phone quality, but lowish quality, soft, little taster at Queensland Raceway. So the general consensus is that it's not it sounds like a race car. And basically, it will do as a V6 turbo. It will do. That's just, the general consensus. It'll do. And and that sort of does sound like a negative thing, but when you actually compare it to IndyCar and F1 and basically the British Touring Car Championship, the TCR International Series, and basically any other touring car series right now that's running a small engine, it sounds better. And that's, a real positive thing to see, as as we as the touring cars move towards and Tin Tops moves towards small engines, the engine that still sounds the best and the category that's got the sound variety, will have, just the attractive edge, coupled with good racing. And supercars currently, at this point in time, at the point of recording, it fits the bill better than any other 10 top category that's not, NASCAR related at this point in time.
Yeah, it's the best of, you could argue it's the best of a bad bunch, effectively. There isn't really anything else, and of course we talked earlier about DTM zone problems, and they were trying to move to inline V4s, so you never know what will happen. So that's all happening well and good. A couple of other quick news stories. The Supercars managing director, Matt Braid, has resigned. This is an interesting one. Basically, this is the guy who joined Supercars as commercial director in 2015. He was managing director last year. And he was charged with two things. The Super Utes, the new generation, of course, which is based off the trucks, not necessarily the sleek Holden Utes and the Ford Falcon Utes of the past. That has fallen over and been postponed till next year. They were meant to be scrapping all the old Utes last year, but they've had to keep them running this year. In addition to that, we've also had the Super 5000 series, which has been controversial to say the least, particularly with
The
the
debates. Oh.
particularly with the rival Formula
I
5.
think, you know, if you want a public opinion of the whole Super 5000, Formula Thunder 5000, just go on social media because
Yes.
it really does, you know, say they really do say it all. So
Yeah,
I
they
think we'll
both joined
just leave
forces,
it at
so I
that.
think we can bury the hatchet there. They're both going to work together to make what will hopefully be a very exciting V8 powered single seater series, which, let's face it, if they can pull it off, will be absolutely exceptional. Could really be the star attraction in the support categories at a lot of races, here in supercars and, of course, in the wider circuit as well. But he's also resigned. There's not really much we can say about that, to be honest, because I think supercars in general has been all right, except for some of the other hiccups with super utes and things like that. But other than that, it's not really much of a story in terms of thing. This isn't exactly the next Bernie Ecclestone or anything. He hasn't really had it. The man running the show is still James Warburton and the like. And I guess if there's going to be any big change, it'll happen from the top. So I guess, yeah, we figured we'd mention it, but there's not really much to talk about there. What is interesting to talk about is, of course, Queensland Raceway will be there this weekend for the Ipswich Super Sprint, which is going to be on the calendar until at least 2028. Another long-term deal. They're also going to have a multi-million-dollar sponsorship deal with Ipswich City Council. The recently depauperized Ipswich City Council, which I think is going to be interesting to see how that funding works out. With that as well, they're going to put in some long overdue upgrades to the facility, upgrades that were pretty much needed the day it opened, to be brutally honest, as well as the new layout, which has been tweaked yet again. To be honest, I kind of like this one a little bit more than the last one. It actually looks less like they've added a little squiggle up the top and more like they've added something of worth to the circuit. Basically, well, the new changes are, once I get it up, but I'm just gonna run with it from memory, is that the final turn, instead of turning back onto the main street, they will instead head out round through the car park and through the old rally cross practice circuit to the back, nice long straight to a hairpin very similar to the one at Calder Park. I think that's the one that comes to my mind. Then runs back through a nice little left right, fairly loose, before another hairpin turning round where they rejoin the main track with a left hander as opposed to a right hander. The new layout basically means that you've got another circuit to play with, effectively a second circuit on there along with the existing national and club layouts. Overall, I don't think it's too bad. I think it's actually pretty solid, except for possibly the loss of some banking, which was on the older design, but that can still be added. We never know. But other than that, it looks like a fairly sense not a fairly common sense update. And if the upgrades go ahead, which are much needed and probably more important, I think we can say that Queensland Raceway isn't the worst track on the Supercars calendar.
Yeah, well, it's certainly very positive. You know, first off, the deal itself, till 2028. That's actually, I'm 90% sure that's the best and most secure contract that Queensland Raceway has ever had with supercars. So, and you know, and as their contract died has been 1 year to 2 year. And you know, on the odd account, a 3 year
I think the
contract.
last deal
So,
they were talking about a couple of days ago was only 3 years, another 3 years.
three
But
years.
clearly, now that this has gone through, Supercars are very happy to have them for another 10.
So it's a fantastic and you know, just the suggested track changes themselves. That actually remind me a little bit of the track extension itself reminds me a little bit of Donington in the UK, you know, specifically with the GP extension, and like, you know, it still keeps the characteristics and you know what's good about Queensland Raceway and the variety of overtaking opportunities. Like you'd still be able to overtake in turn one and turn three, and you know possibly into turn six still, as well as adding a few more in, and you know just ma making it like they're just you know changing up a little bit. And one thing I would like to see is you know just a slight introduction into you know it not being at like It's difficult because, on the one hand, it's fantastic how the crowd just, is completely around the circuit and not it. Like, it's because if the crowd was in it, it sort of blocks the view. But at the same time, it'd be good if the crowd was in the circuit, just to create, more, just more of an actual race circuit itself rather than, just, a track that's, basically, confined to a box. So yeah, there's pluses and minuses in that, and yeah, it really shouldn't take up too much space. Like, the paddock itself will be shifted around, and and the rallycross circuit itself, isn't particularly used that much, and there's certainly no shortage of space around Queensland Raceway that, like, they could just have it south of the south of the drag strip. So yeah, on the whole, I quite like it. I certainly do prefer, the original conceived plan of, basically just turning left before turn one, doing a bit of a squiggle, and then coming back before, before the turn one apex of the current circuit. So yeah, on the whole, fantastic for motorsport in southeast Queensland to just have Queensland Raceway locked down and away for the next 10 years. So yeah, just a fantastic job, and and they say it's going to be all completed within the next 3 years. So by the 2021 Ipswich Super Sprint, where we possibly could be seeing V6 and V8, V8 Mustangs, and possible Camaros, and the whole new next gen Commodore all running around, we could be seeing it from the new circuit itself and all the new facilities. So yeah, and as Devine said, we are going there this weekend, and with the possible exception of the V6 turbo engine Red Bull Holden Racing Team car, and what's happening with DTM, it certainly will be the talk of the paddock this weekend.
Yeah, it certainly will be. Is this going to be another, hopefully, a great weekend? We're going to have a bumper grid as well. I think 30 cars or 29 are going
Yeah,
to be.
30 cars. So we've got Shane Davies, Jack LeBrock, James Golding, and Todd Hazelwood, all competing in the four wild card entries this weekend. And yeah, this is for Shane Davies, Jack LeBrock, and James Golding. This is their second wild card event this year, and for Todd Hazelwood, it's his first and only for this year. That's just the deal that Matt Stone Racing have being able to come up with in terms of the actual resources themselves. And they're actually pretty solid all round team, so I wouldn't be surprised if Todd Hazelwood joins the other four to really fight it out for the top 15 places. So yeah, 30 cars, like, you can possibly say Supercars is great again, 30 car plus fields, yeah, kind of thing. You can say that, but yeah, it's just, it really does show the strength of the wildcard races, and really just does showcase, why basically grassroots events are so important to a category, where you can have, extra cars, running around, and why, it is important to have the Kumho V8 Touring Car Series, the third tier of supercars, racing instead of the Dunlop Series, to make sure that there are wildcard entries. And it's a big supercars field for the more grassroots races. So yeah, it's all fantastic, and all four of them, are very good drivers, and all four of them, can be on the grid in the future. Yeah, all four of them, once again, are in prime position for the enduros, and for the silly season in snatching up a full-time drive. So yeah, we'll see them on track. I think this might be Todd Hazelwood's supercars debut. Yes, it is. It is Todd Hazelwood's supercars debut. So that's something to keep in mind. If he becomes successful in the main game in Car 35, my number, by the way, you can, go on to Car 36, Todd Hazelwood. But yeah, on the whole, should be a good weekend. And yeah, I think, with the genius of Ludo behind DJI, Tim Penske, and how slippery the Falcon those two Shell V-Power Falcons are. I think, this could be a weekend where DJI, Tim Penske, get one back over Triple Eight.
Yeah, that's certainly going to be interesting. This is, of course, been a traditionally a strong racetrack for the Queensland teams, in particular Rebel Racing. But of course, you never know with the way DJR is going, and of course how close the championship has been. The two championship contenders we've really seen narrow it down to Scott McLaughlin, Jay Whincup, Coulthard, and Van Gisbergen are still there. I wouldn't rule them out at all yet, but they've got about 150 points between them, 152 points between Whincup and Coulthard in second and third place. So that's certainly quite the gap to close down for Coulthard, Van Gisbergen, and Chas Mostert. But all any of them could spring an upset. Any of the, I guess, intermediate midfield could possibly get one up there. Mark Winterbottom has had a really dry year so far. The best finished second place in that second race at Phillip Island. We're still waiting for him to show up. Same with Craig Lowndes, also being a fairly ordinary year from him. And then, of course, we don't know where the likes of Garth Tander, Cameron Walters, or even David Reynolds, who's had some good runs of recent, are going to end up as well. And of course, the team's championship, DJR Team Penske leading, but by only less than 30 points. So that is going to, I think, no, I've done my maths wrong. Less than 100 points between DJ and Team Penske in Triple Eight. So that should be another close finish. All in all, a very exciting weekend of supercars coming up. Very difficult to pick a winner for this weekend, to be honest, Josh. I'd have to say you can't really go past Whincup and McLaughlin for one of them. And for the other one, I think maybe Van Gisbergen might possibly stake his claim as being still up there because he's had some success recently at Winton, so he might be the one to spring a surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. And also as well, there has been a little bit of talk that Fabian Coulthard is really rearing to bounce back from what was a pretty dire weekend in Townsville. So you can't discount Car 12 either. So yeah, it's it, on the whole, it's going to be a pretty good weekend, and it's supposed to be all sunny, so we'll see some really good super sprint, super soft tire racing. So yeah, and that's another thing, how will Victorian teams, what will their solutions be to running the super soft tire for the first time at Queensland Raceway, when all the Queensland teams have done some testing at Queensland Raceway with the tires in the past. So that's another thing to keep in mind as well. And also as well, whether or not Walkinshaw Racing start to back up their claims about massive changes, massive development, and all that stuff as well. So that's another thing to keep an eye on. However, I would have to say that all that build up for Walkinshaw Racing and all the upgrades is mainly for the Enduro Cup. So that's when they're really gonna have a try and just have a crack at it, and all the rest. So yeah, should be a good weekend of supercars.
Yeah, certainly set to be a lot of fun. That kicks off, of course, on Friday and then continues to Saturday and Sunday. Moving to the United States and to the Verizon IndyCar Series, plenty of news coming ahead of this weekend's race at Mid-Ohio, including our first look in the flesh at the new for 2018 Dallara IndyCar Era Kit, heavily based, of course, on the Dallara DW12. But amongst the changes, the front gets a bit shorter. We lose the big clunky airbox. We lose the wheel pods as well, which were, of course, very controversial additions. It's simplified. We've got a nice, clean rear wing. This is, of course, the main look of the Aero Kit for the Speedway. We still don't know what it's going to look like on a road course, but everything looks very nice, very sleek, and very nimble. And I think this is the right approach that IndyCar should be taking. Most F1 is trying to go with the big, more aero. Let's put everything on. Let's make them look big and intimidating. I like the idea of IndyCars being nimble and quick because that's what they are. They're racing on ovals, which are incredibly quick, incredibly fast. You need to be incredibly adept and agile, and this sort of fits the image of it being the nimble, fast, the fast, quick, yeah, basically the fast, quick alternative to Formula One and the sleek alternative. And I do love these a lot. Both the Honda and the Chevrolet, which of course are running on the same Era Kit, look spectacular in these shots, Josh.
Yeah, absolutely, and the response has been overwhelmingly positive, from fans alike. And And, they're rejoicing, like the renditions, they look very promising. And, you sort of had to take it with a pinch of salt because, what if it looks terrible in the flesh? And it doesn't, and it's fantastic. And to make it even better, IndyCar have announced that they are reintroducing ground effect to open wheel racing. That is fantastic news. And they've done it to improve overtaking. So, Naveen, someone is listening to us. Someone is listening. So it's
Yes.
fantastic.
As
And
part of the, if they're both part of the small bring back ground effects movement, one day it'll happen to Formula One one day, but at least in IndyCar we'll get to have a look at it. And if they do it's certainly going to be spectacular to watch, I'd have to say. They're really going to be putting Formula One to the sword, particularly because they're lighter as well. I think I'd love to see them go up against it. Maybe if we see some testing even on Circuit of Americas. One time, I do know they occasionally test it. I'd love to see the lap times and the comparison between F1 and IndyCar. And it is great that we're going to have two really solid open wheel series, both in America, because that's, I think, a very healthy state of affairs, Josh.
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, IndyCar, it's in a very promising situation right now. Like, there are new teams coming in to the IndyCar season full time next year, so the grid's getting bigger, so that's a plus. Ground effect, less aero, it looks, very sleek, and there's no there's I think there would be actually be a reduction in the amount of dirty air, so that's a big plus. So that's more, so we can expect, next year that, the cars are going to be closely following each other, licking the rear tail light, and basically the rear wing. So that's a big plus. And it's fantastic. So yeah, if IndyCar get their new TV deal in the States right, and then get their aero and the, and then get their shield right, and then if they can entice a third ma a new manufacturer to come into the field by the end of next year, then it'll be fantastic. It'll be like the kart days of old, like not quite to the same extent, but it would be in fantastic shape. So it really is, a land of promise right now for IndyCar in the world motorsport. So it's fantastic, and everyone's just so eager for 2018 to roll around. As we've got, there's 17 rounds, all 17 rounds for this year confirmed for next year as well. And there is, the talk of, a race in Central America still yet to, that's still in the works, possibly, maybe, but still, a little bit of a long shot. But anything can happen with the schedule. And also returns to Michigan and Homestead Miami. And let's not, and there's a huge, huge silly season coming up, which affects most of the grid, because right now, there are eight drivers, tied down for next year. And while that does sound like a good amount, the rest of the field is completely all over the place. So yeah, it's we could potentially see a pretty different grid to the IndyCar series next year. So yeah, on the whole, there's a lot to talk about, a lot to be excited about. And if IndyCar does, really well, and really hits it off and makes all the right deals, and gets, another manufacturer alongside Chevrolet and Honda on board, then that they've done the job, that they've done what they need to do. So a big, 12 to 18 to 24 months at IndyCar, and from everything I've seen, they're doing fantastically so far. So yeah, on the whole, good luck to them. I think it'll be great for IndyCars to, succeed. And it'd be great, if the global motorsport community had the option to watch F1 one weekend. F1 has a weekend off, and then IndyCar roars back into town, and then they just alternate every weekend, so we can always get open wheel action. But unfortunately, they do clash, because that's just how the world works. So yeah, on the whole, fantastic news. You know, really looking forward to it, really excited. And IndyCar, if you are listening, please come back to Australia. I'd certainly go to an IndyCar race in a heartbeat, you know, especially if it was in Queensland. Like, I'd be there straight up. And yeah, IndyCar's just, you know, it's very, very promising right now. And you know, there's no
Well,
reason why, you
Queensland
know, they can't
Raceway did
continue.
say they wanted some more international events, so you never know what's going to happen there.
Maybe, maybe. And you know, while that would be, you know, an outside chance, when you compare it to Tail and Bend, it's certainly not out of the question in terms of, you know, whether or not they can stitch a deal together. As you know, there is the talk of international expansion once again. You know, Europe has been highlighted as their main target point this time, and they're also acknowledging that their strong fan base in Central and South America in their talks as well. But you know, you wouldn't really rule out a return to Australia in the past, because I really don't think that IndyCar have forgotten about the 4-day mega circus, 250,000 people attendances that they had back at Surfers Paradise back in the late 90s to early 2000s. So yeah, just you know, we'll just have to wait and see, but the future of IndyCar looks really, really bright.
Okay, looking forward to this weekend. The Honda Indy 200 at Mid-Ohio, always a great racetrack to return to Mid-Ohio. And we've certainly got a cracker of a championship coming up. The top five, four drivers separated by only 23 points. Isn't that tantalizing? And actually, not too far behind them is we've got plenty more contenders in there. Scott Dixon leading by 3 points. 10th place at Toronto, fairly solid but not spectacular. Hiroki Kashima didn't do much better. 8th place, he's 3 points behind, could really, has really cemented as a firm favourite for this one this year. Simon Pagenaud, 404 points in 3rd place. Joseph Newgarden, 4 points behind, in 4th. Will Power, 5th, the last of the Penske drivers, but still not too far off, even though he's got a 60-point gap. If he has a good run, he could certainly be up there near the end. And the series is at the moment at its most competitive. 5 different winners in the last races, 9 different winners so far this year. Anything can happen, Josh. You have to say, though, on a road course, I'd have to possibly favour Scott Dixon. He didn't have a great run last time. I think he got taken out. But still, very strong. The Hondas, very strong, although not as strong as we've seen, because, of course, Chevrolet have made gains in recent weeks at both the street circuits and the ovals and the likes. But on a road course, I think Honda might possibly have it in the bag, and if they do, there's no better man than Scott Dixon to take it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, this is a really big weekend for Scott Dixon, because after this we've got two ovals and then two road courses. So you know, if he has, you know, another terrible weekend, then it's very, very delicately poised between himself and Castroneves, Paginot, and Newgarden. As wouldn't that be the story if Newgarden comes from behind and takes the IndyCar title this year? That would be the absolute perfect way to basically, you know, give a real boost to the hype of IndyCar in 2018, to have an American champion come from behind to take it. Because, you know, I didn't really see Newgarden as much of a contender after, you know, Phoenix and in May. You know, I really didn't see, you know, how he could be a championship contender, but he's only 23 points behind. And, you know, he won at Toronto last weekend. He came second at Road America, and then second in Detroit, and fourth as well. And, you know, he had it, and he was, you know, involved in the Texas shenanigans where he didn't finish, and he finished pretty all right in Iowa at 6th place. So he's on form. You wouldn't discount him, you know. But you know, you wouldn't have never thought it. But yeah, just it's really, very finely balanced right now. Scott Dixon, he has the advantage this weekend, but if he doesn't capitalize it, it's a very, very equal level playing field, and he would know how good Castroneves, Paginot, and Newgarden are. So yeah, it's going to be, you know, a really, you know, crucial weekend once again. And yeah, Dixon really needs to nail the setup and, you know, have a really good race Let's not forget, this was the circuit that Mikael Laursen almost won at last year. So a surprise is certainly on the card. So you never know who could take the checkered flag at Mid Ohio late on Saturday afternoon in the US.
Yeah, certainly should be very exciting indeed. Another great weekend of racing coming up. Let's now move to the other big series in the United States, NASCAR, which had a real wild card winner over the weekend. Casey Kane coming out to win the Brickyard 400 at Indianapolis. A real, real surprise. He took his first win of the year and his first since 2014, won in a crazy finish, running into overtime after a big wreck near the end of the race. It certainly makes things very interesting when it comes to the playoff picture with now, if my knowledge of the NASCAR schedule is right, only a handful of races to go. I think we've got six more races to
Six
go.
races.
And there, that's certainly going to be interesting, particularly because you have a couple of big names who aren't in the chase hunt in the mo anymore at the moment, and that could be a real surprise.
Like last weekend, was just I think Steve Myers from iRacing said it really well, how all the sim how sim racing was clearer than what we saw at Indianapolis last weekend, because it was chaos there. Whatever I don't know what was different about this week, but for some reason that all the NASCAR drivers got together and said, hey, let's go crazy and let's create total chaos and make sure only like 20 cars finish the race. Casey Kane, who would have thought Casey Kane taking out a victory and really stamping himself into the chase. And it's just the weekend that no one really expected, like it's sort it, this year's been sort of a bit going against the form of what NASCAR usually is, whereas usually NASCAR is usually surprised when pretty mixed field every single week, whereas this year it's been mostly all Kyle Larson, Kevin Harvick, and Martin Truex Jr., and the Penske cars in the background. So for that to happen, pretty unexpected to say the least, and the fashion of how the race happened itself was even more unexpected, especially at Indianapolis. I think that was easily the most chaotic race at Indianapolis that NASCAR has ever had. And handing the tricky triangle, which always can really ruin races and cause tantrums, I think we could possibly see that continue. And to make it even worse for the NASCAR drivers and their stress management, we've got Watkins Glen next week as well. So yeah, NASCAR is in a very chaotic world right now in terms of just racing in general. As after it, we've got Michigan, Bristol, Darlington, and Richmond. All four of those circuits, really do not take any prisoners. So, yeah, on the whole, it's very unpredictable, and we certainly will not know the chase order heading into the round 16 until the final stint at Richmond. So, yeah, heading into Pocono, who knows? We can go back and basically see that Ryan Blaney won, so that basically says that there's no form guide whatsoever, so don't even bother picking it. But yeah, we'll have to see what happens. And also as well, still waiting on Kyle Busch to win, but it's not really like most of the NASCAR community is waiting for that to happen, because they prefer it to not happen because I don't like him. So yeah,
Yeah, very interesting.
I'll just leave that statement there to basically just sum up the Kyle Busch shenanigans show right now. But yeah, Hayden Pocono, no form guide, just pick a car and just hope for the best, really. So yeah, it's gonna be a very unpredictable weekend at Pocono, and and it's not even the wild card race. The wild card race is at Watkins Glen ne next weekend. So yeah, it's very unpredictable in NASCAR right now.
Yeah, so let's actually have a look and see who we've got in the playoffs at the moment. Nobody's, of course, confirmed, but basically the way you get in is by either winning or finishing in the top 16, I guess, in terms of points. And of course, so here is the list that NASCAR have got. And they've got everybody plus their playoff points on top because, of course, the way it works is that you do well in the preseason, you get a little bit of a bump in the postseason. To kick things off, Martin Truex Jr., of course, leads the postseason tally, 2,044 points, 3 wins, and 14 stage wins. He's just been incredible, and it was very unlucky that he didn't get round to getting to the championship for last year. You'd have to say he's a real surefire contender this year. Moving down, number two, Kyle Larson, 2,023 points, 2 wins, Auto Club in Michigan, and 3 stage wins. So compared to Kyle Busch, sorry, not compared. Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr., not too impressive, but he's still been up there in the points, and that's why he's second. Brad Keselowski, 2,018 points, 2 wins, 3 stage wins as well. Jimmy Johnson, fourth, 2,017 points, 3 wins, 1 stage win. Then Kevin Harvick, 2,016 points, 1 win at Sonoma, 3 stage wins. Kyle Busch, 2,014 points. He will qualify by points, not by win, and by seven, and because of the 7-stage wins. So he'll only qualify by points, but because he's been very good but not good enough to win, he is effectively sixth in the standings in the pecking order, effectively. So that's the Kyle Busch scenario. Very interesting indeed. Then Denny Hamlin, 2,013 points, 1 win at New Hampshire and 2-stage wins. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., 2,010 points with 2 wins, Talladega and the second race at Daytona, but nothing else in terms of stage wins and the like. Ryan Blaney, 2,008 points with 1 win, and the last win, of course, at Pocono, 3 stage wins as well. Kurt Busch, 2,005 points, of course, his 1 win being the big one at the first race at Daytona. Ryan Newman, 2,005 points, 1 win at Phoenix, but nothing else in terms of stage wins. Casey Kane, of course, jumps in with that 1 win at Indianapolis, there's no stage wins. Austin Dillon, 1 win at Charlotte, that gives him 2,005 points as well. A lot of people on that 2,005 point bubble, including, I think, 5 drivers. Chase Elliott is in there on points and 2 stage wins, not being the greatest of year in terms of wins for stage Chase Elliott, but he's been consistent in performance, and that's what gets him over the line. Number 15, Jamie McMurray, 2,004 points, qualifies in points only, nothing else. And the same for Matt Kenseth, and of course the big names missing out are Clint Boyer and Joey Logano, because Joey Logano's Richmond wins doesn't count towards playoff eligibility for some reason, and Boyer, who's been fast but hasn't won. So that's why, and even though he's in the top 16, he's been nudged down because of some of those other guys with wins. So all very complicated, I guess. Probably more complicated than the Chase, where it was win or points, but now you've got playoff points and stage wins to worry about as well. But at least it has thrown a couple of wild cards up there, and I think certainly the round of 16 is going to be very interesting, Josh.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very mixed. And imagine the scenes if Joe Logano doesn't qualify for the playoffs. That'll be a real sight to see. Also, as well, another big name that wasn't mentioned that's missing out is Dale Earnhardt Jr. his final season. Still no win, and not in the top 16 on points. So, it'll be real shame for Junior Nation to not have Dale up there in the chase in his final full time season. So, it's certainly it's very much at this point in time in terms of chase standings, because they will change and. Just right now, outside looking in, Clint Boyer, Joe Logano, Eric Jones, he's there as well as Daniel Suarez. So, the two rookies as well, sort of close and looking in, but still on the outside. So, still very varied. It's going to be real. There's going to be quite a few mixed faces in the round of 16. Heading into the round of 12 and the round of 8, we very well could see some very surprise eliminations. So, it's all to play for in NASCAR right now, and certainly very, very open.
Yeah, certainly indeed. So NASCAR, of course, kicks off usual time on Monday morning at Pocono. So before we go, we're going to have a quick chat about MotoGP, and in particular, Jack Miller. Plenty going on in Jack Miller's contract life, indeed. There are rumours that he will be joining the Pramac Ducati squad, and that he had reached an agreement to join them in the last round before the summer break. However, he's not going to be saying anything till after this weekend's Suzuka 8 Hours. So we have no idea what's going to be going on with Jack Miller. Josh, do you think that a move to Ducati will be the right thing, given how strong they've looked this year? Or do you think that it's best for him to bide his time and possibly have a look in at a Honda factory seat in a couple of years' time?
Well, it's interesting because right now, Danny Pedrosa and Marc Marquez, you know, certainly are doing the job for the factory Honda team right now. And Danny Pedrosa, you know, being the oldest of the two, being only 31 years of age. So it really is a question of time and, you know, whether, and, you know, what to do in terms of making the right move. It's an opportunity for him because, you know, you could see that, you know, because any rider would, you know, just be, you know, getting a little bit restless by their time and, you know, how he wants to really get up get into a really competitive, onto a really competitive bike. So, yeah, it's his choice and, you know, he feels like, you know, he's just wasting time at Honda and, you know, there's the opportunity at Ducati, you know, there's quite a few rides open at Ducati right now, and sometimes you've just really got to make the big move and the big gamble, and just hope it pays off. So, yeah, I think, you know, it really does come down to, like, yes, he does enjoy, you know, his you know Honda team. You know, like he does enjoy. Yeah, well, it's difficult because, you know, He's part of the Honda family, and a Honda bikes, you know, really are, you know, can be, you know, very, very competitive. But, you know, you've just got to wonder, you know, how long do you bite your time? And, you know, if you bite your time for too long, do you get shafted out and have no options available? So it really is, you know, just about Jack Miller basically playing chess against the rest of the MotoGP grid in terms of, you know, trying to find the best possible bike for future seasons. So, yeah, like, I can't blame Jack for doing that because, you know, I think, you know, he is starting to really hit his potential with the team he's currently at because, you know, his best result is sixth once again at the Netherlands, you know, is fantastic and he's a regular points finisher. The only time he hasn't finished in the points in the top 15 has been when he's retired. At Jerez and Catalunya. So, yeah, you can't really blame him. But you know, I think, you know, we'll look back. We can only look back at it, you know, in 12 months after the deal has been done, and you know, basically see whether or not that was the correct decision or not. You know, his potential future teammate, which comes into the form of Danilo Petrucci, native Italian, so, you know, possibly could be favoured by Ducati, and is only 26 years of age, you know, who has been, you know, pretty okay. He's currently eighth in the standings, and he's got two podiums this year, so it's a mixed bag. So there are pluses and minuses to staying and to also going, so you know, we'll have to see what Jack Miller comes up with, and you know, he will think about this, you know, for quite a while, and you know, he's definitely doing the job against his teammate Tito Rabbit. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see what Jack Miller and his management team come up with, and yeah, hopefully it works out the best for him.
Yeah, certainly going to be very interesting when we get back to MotoGP next week. So, this weekend, plenty of action. Formula One returns to Hungary, IndyCar returns to mid-Ohio, NASCAR at Pocono, the Formula E decider, and of course the Ipswich Super Sprint, which Josh and I will both be going to next week. It's the winter break / summer break, depending on which hemisphere you're on, and we'll be wrapping up all of the action from the weekend and sort of looking ahead to what the rest of the year holds and what next year could hold, particularly in terms of the silly season, which is set to go off in Formula One, Viet Supercars, IndyCar and everywhere. Basically, plenty of news to discuss and break through next week. We'll see you then. I'm Naveen Razik.
And I'll be Josh Carroll.
And we'll see you next time. Goodbye.